The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tastytrade Inc. is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
Right now on Fast, a rare green wave on Wall Street. The Dow up for the fourth day in a row. Retail, its best performance in a year. Williams-Sonoma rocking after hours, and energy stocks continuing to hit new all-time highs. Time to start nibbling again in this market. Plus, shares of NVIDIA lower after hours. The outlook for next quarter, not so rosy. All the details straight ahead. And we are keeping an eye on shares of Twitter. The stock popping after hours. Elon Musk making new moves that make it seem like he is going forward with the deal at the original offer price. The breaking details coming up. I'm Melissa Lee. This is Fast Money, live from the Nasdaq market site in the heart of Times Square. On the desk tonight, Karen Feinerman, Dan Nathan, Guy Adami, and Tim Seymour. We start off with a Fed-led boost to the markets. The minutes from the central bank's latest meeting seem to provide no new reasons for concern, and that was enough to lift stocks and send the Nasdaq higher by 1.5%, the S&P and Dow following suit. But now, in the after-hour session, weak guidance from NVIDIA sending shares of the chipmaker tanking. Could that be the news to take air out of the market tomorrow? Will this reignite those fears about technology, the fears about a change in the environment, a change in terms of how we should value these companies, Dan?
Yeah, well, let's be very clear. That guidance was not particularly bad, and they used the sort of mulligan that you might have expected, right? Supply chain issues as it relates to Russia and then the continued COVID lockdowns in China. So I think we all could have expected that. If you look at the guidance that they gave, it's not really that bad for Q2. I think the issue why this stock is probably down in the aftermarket, that investors in this environment have been conditioned to shoot first and ask questions later, and that's probably what's going on. I think at its lows, in the aftermarket, it was down 10%. Again, this is not a whole heck of a lot of volume, so it's not really indicative of that. But, you know, here's a stock that's been cut in half. It trades well above a market multiple. It trades about 12 times sales. And if those sales were set to decline, let's say greater than what the company just guided to, you would see this thing probably making new 52-week lows and be re-rated like almost every other great growth stock in this market.
Yeah, already cut in half. I think that's key, Tim Seymour. What we've seen is, you know, a stock can come out like this. It's already been cut in half. It's already been beaten down. And yet it still manages to drag the entire sector lower. We saw it with Snap, a much smaller company than NVIDIA. And that took Apple down the next day.
Yeah, I like those data center revenues. It actually, I think, is a pretty good read on some of the broader players in the space. But obviously, we also saw that these numbers have taken down AMD, Micron, Marvell. And so they're trading as a group. I do think that the outlook here is decent. I think, you know, let's wait and hear some more. I think the gaming revenue is of a concern. The multiple isn't terrible. It's obviously great relative to itself. It's somewhere around 20 times forward. What we forget here is that this was a stock that was, you know, from February of 2020 to even, you know, where it traded up to. It's pulled back 51%, but it moved 500% essentially in 2 years, 2.5 years. It's a dynamic here where I think, you know, people have to understand what to pay for these stocks at this point. There was nothing bad, I think, relative to the environment we're in and what these guys said about China and Russia, as Dan pointed out. Like, I don't think these are reasons you go out and sell this company. I do think it is a case where we still need to wait and see what the multiple should trade for.
I don't think this will be a Snap moment for a couple of reasons. One, it was up going into this print. So if you take that out, it really hasn't moved that much. But what was so amazing about Snap was how quickly the business deteriorated from April 21st until May 21st-ish, give or take. And so NVIDIA, we haven't heard from them since a couple of months. So this isn't a huge move off of where they were. I think it comes back to the point Tim and Dan are making about what's the right multiple. Used to be these kind of companies traded at peak and trough multiples. This one's been at a sky-high multiple for quite some time. But it's not a lot to hate, I think, in this earnings release.
So it's all a matter of what do we pay for these sorts of companies, Guy. You had an interesting tweet. I think it was, I want to say it was a couple days ago, about Tesla. Tesla reporting a great quarter. And what has the stock done since then? Just gone lower.
Yeah. Traded up to 1080 that day in the after hours. I know Dan talked about it a lot. He got a lot of ats on the Twitter, and it subsequently traded down to $600. I mean, you can do the math. That's a pretty significant move. I'm looking at NVIDIA here, though, and I'm sort of scratching my head. I know it was up $8 or $9 during the day, so it's given that back a little bit more. But you know, that second quarter guide, $8.1 billion. I think consensus was about $8.4 billion. I thought this quarter was okay. Again, I find myself surprised at the reaction in the stock in the after hours. I would submit you could buy the stock here, but you know, the market's doing strange things. I don't think it was that bad as to have this move. The move to me is not commensurate with the guide, just my opinion.
Let's get some more details on the quarter. The conference call, by the way, is also just underway. Christina Partsinevelis is following the story. Christina.
Yeah, so NVIDIA's revenue beat was driven largely by record revenue in data center and gaming. So data center business sells chips for cloud computing companies and enterprises. And that section actually, or sector, just grew 83%, surpassing its core gaming business, which sells graphic cards for games as well as crypto mining. NVIDIA's auto business, though, that was down about 10% on a year-over-year basis. And despite this overall strength that we're talking about in categories, minus autos maybe for now, the company does remain cautious. You guys have talked about it. Guidance coming in lighter at $8.1 billion, including a $500 million hit relating to Russia and China COVID lockdowns. Keep in mind, though, forward-looking, the chipmaker did confirm just this past Sunday it would slow the pace of hiring, joining other major tech firms that have decided to be more cautious with their operating budgets in recent weeks. Since you're seeing shares down now almost 7%, I will get on that call and hopefully get some more info as to why we're seeing such this massive drop despite, you know, guidance coming in weak, but not as bad as maybe justified by this drop.
All right. Christina, thanks. We'll keep us posted. Christina Partsinevelis. Tim, what would you want to hear on the conference call?
Well, I want to hear some of the strength on the enterprise side. I definitely, again, data center came in at $3.75 billion versus $3.6, so it was stronger. We haven't really heard a lot so far about gross margin pressure, inflation, and dynamics that I think are part of the reason other companies have sold off here. Look, the impact of NVIDIA should not be understated, and I think that's one of the reasons why we're starting the show with it. This is now 3.4% of the NASDAQ. This is one of the bellwethers, but when you think about leading-edge chips and some of the technology and some of the most exciting sectors of the market, this was front of the class. And this is a story where I think you have to remember, we saw an upgrade last week on our show. We talked about that in AMD, where I think the analyst said something like you buy good companies when they're down. And in fact, that was really much of what the upgrade was predicated on, that you can't time the market. Well, I think when you look at NVIDIA, you look at the quality, you look at the segments that they're in, and they're actually leading. There's competition from Qualcomm. We've heard about this. We've heard AMD. But I do think it's a case where this is one of those great companies.
It also gets to the heart of this whole big question that the market is facing right now. And that is, even for good companies, even companies that report decent quarters or what look like decent quarters, they're followed by a decline. So what multiple do you pay? And so that, Dan, I mean, for investors out there who wanted to, you know, dip their toes in the market, it feels like catching a falling knife, literally.
Yeah, I mean, one way to get exposure to this would be like through the SMH without having that idiosyncratic risk. I mean, this is trading again at 12 times sales. It's a $400 billion market cap company. It's one of the largest in the S&P and in the NASDAQ. And so, I mean, this is what we're seeing right now. We're at the stage of this decline in high growth or high valuation names where they've shot all those other names, right? We know the ones that are down 60, 70, 80% now. And I think it's important to understand that we were talking about this stock 6 months ago as joining the trillion-dollar market cap club, right? And here it is at $400 billion, so it's still trading at 12 times sales, okay? So for all intents and purposes, this is a hardware company. I think a lot of people who've followed tech over many, many years would say that's probably too high. So it overshot to the upside. It had that 500% move over the last 5 years. I think it was like the best-performing stock in the S&P for a couple years straight. Might it overshoot to the downside despite good fundamentals? Yeah, it could in a market like this.
I mean, here's a silver lining, maybe. I don't know. Guy, I want to know if you would agree with that. They're coming after the likes of NVIDIA again. And so is that actually a good thing where the selling continues even in the very good, in the quote unquote perceived good companies in the growth areas? And maybe that's a good thing in the market downturn in terms of the cycle.
I think that's an excellent point. I mean, maybe we're sort of getting closer to the end of this entire thing than the beginning. I'd suggest we're somewhere closer to the middle, but I totally understand what you're saying. And I do think it is a healthy thing, to Dan's point. I mean, you are talking about a company that probably has, I don't know, 18% or so revenue growth. Talking about a company that's probably trading at 10 times next year's revenue. Maybe that number should be closer to 8 or 9. Maybe that's a historical norm. But to your point, the fact that they're selling it on this quarter is suggestive that maybe we're taking some of the excess out of the market, which I think is a good thing. I will say we led with the market. It's important to point that out. Market's actually traded pretty well since that 38.10 low in the S&P, and we probably do have a couple more days of bounces ahead of us.
All right, let's get to Twitter now. That stock is jumping after hours on reports that Elon Musk may be upping how much money he is personally putting into his planned purchase of the company. Let's get to Julia Borson for the details. Julia.
Melissa, that's right. An SEC filing, Elon Musk reporting that he's seeking additional funding after his margin loan commitment expired. Now, shares are up about 7% on this news that Musk is upping his total commitment to $33.5 billion unless he gets more outside funding. So that's an additional $6.25 billion in equity. Now, the stock is moving higher on this, presumably because this indicates that Musk is moving forward with the deal as originally negotiated. The idea that he would seek more financing is also not entirely unexpected. It comes after reports about 3 weeks ago that he was seeking more financing for this deal. Now, and it also comes after Twitter's shareholder meeting today, in which the company's only comment on the deal was that they are moving forward with the terms originally negotiated with Musk. This filing also comes just as the FTC and DOJ announce that they are suing Twitter over allegedly misrepresenting to its users the extent to which the company maintained and protected the security and privacy of their non-public contact information, notably alleging that the company failed to disclose that it used contact information to target ads. Melissa?
Julia, there's part of the filing, I believe, that which indicates that Musk is talking to existing shareholders like Jack Dorsey about possibly rolling their existing shares into the new entity, into a parent company, so they would retain their ownership. Is that new? I feel like we knew about it, but I wasn't sure if that was an official thing or if it's an official thing now that it's in a filing.
I'm not sure, Melissa, if that is officially a new thing or if this was something that we just heard about as an idea before. But that is one way for him to maintain, first of all, to maintain a relationship with Dorsey and his investment in the company, but also to count Dorsey among those investors.
All right, Julia, thank you. Julia Borston. I go to Karen first on this. It's trading nowhere near the offer price. So what do you make of all of this?
Well, it is good in that the last we heard from Elon, the deal was on hold.
Right.
Right. So this is better than hold. So that's good. I think that the more equity finance he can raise elsewhere, the better the likelihood that the deal closes, that he has enough. Obviously, Tesla's down quite a bit since he entered to the merger agreement. The company has to say we are going along with the merger agreement that we have. They can't say anything else. I wouldn't be surprised if he does try to renegotiate or even walk away. Any of that can happen. I can't imagine, as a board, dealing with this investor, the richest man in the world, maybe still, I don't know, but and being so uncertain what their true intentions are. So to me, it's a no touch, but this is definitely a little bit of good news in that it's seems to be positive momentum forward.
It just doesn't seem likely that he could commit nearly $34 billion because he owns a little less than 16% of Tesla. I think that is predominantly his wealth. He obviously, I think SpaceX was just valued at $100-something million, but that is not particularly liquid, so we'd have to borrow against that. So if you do 16% of their existing market cap here, it's $682 billion. That puts him a little north of $100 million. He's already pledged $100 million, his stake.
Oh, stake.
Right. Okay. $100 million, right? So think about it, right? $100 billion, he's pledging 33.5. What was the multiple that he'd have to pledge shares?
20%.
Right. This math doesn't work. Okay, so this math. So that's why he's running around trying to get other equity investors. So if you're new an equity investor and you just saw Snap and the results that they had and that stock marked down 40% in a day and now it has a smaller enterprise value than a much worse company like Twitter, in my opinion, you're going to commit equity to that? Nobody's committing equity to that. This is not happening. He's kind of like waiting the thing out and he keeps putting out these filings. So to me, it's all a big fugazi.
I feel like I should go to Guy after
yeah,
that.
Yeah, of course.
No, but I don't know if you guys heard what Jim Breyer Capital, said in Davos, but he basically said he thought Twitter was worth, or he explicitly said Twitter was worth, he believes, between 25, 35 bucks a share, which is still considerably lower. I mean, if you take the 25 end of it, Guy, in terms of the company. What is Twitter if the deal doesn't go through?
Well, you're asking the person that thought it would go through at 54 and change. So, I mean, I just put that out there for context. I'm not sure. I mean, Karen has said it. Dan has said it as well. I mean, if it doesn't go through, it probably trades down to those levels. But what we said last night, and I think this is important, I'm not trying to sort of do a little bit of a U-turn here, but Snap on that flush yesterday, given the volume that it traded and the valuations that we talked about on the show last night, you saw what it did today. I mean, that's probably still the trade in this environment. You know, you had that flush out, you had that volume capitulation. Valuations are reasonable. Snap will get through this, I think. That's the trade here for the pop, in my opinion.
Tim, what's your take on all this?
Look, on Twitter, you know, we forget that there was a shareholder meeting today and there was a lot of things that they talked about, and they didn't talk about this deal because they couldn't talk about this deal and because the CEO, quote, said he was exhausted. And you know, ultimately, they talked about the same old thing. They talked about product enhancement. They talked about to the extent that they are doing more compelling things to increase engagement. I guess, you know, ultimately, this is a company that I believe has intrinsic value. If none of this had happened in this environment, in other words, if Elon did not happen to Twitter, where would the stock be trading now? Has that illuminated the lack of a bid from other parties? That's I don't know if it even matters at this point, but I do think if Elon went away, the stock would trade down to those levels, but I don't think it would stay there. I think you have a dynamic here where, again, I don't think there's a perfect solution in the CEO's chair, but I do think you have a dynamic where it's a company that was worth a whole lot more based upon expectations. Their business was going to be very different in the next year and a half. Is it not going to be? I don't know. But it was an interesting day of really almost nothing in terms of what came out of that meeting.
Coming up, shares of Williams-Sonoma jumping after a beat on the top and the bottom lines. We'll bring you the details on the quarter, plus shares of Kohl's surging on reports that bidders are still competing for the retailer, and it's not the only retailer in rally mode. Should you be adding any to your shopping bag? Don't go anywhere. Fast Money's back in two.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Williams-Sonoma moving higher by almost 16% after posting a beat on the top and the bottom lines. Seema Modi's got the details. Seema.
Hey, Melissa. Breath of fresh air. Higher sales at Pottery Barn and West Elm stores helping the company. Comp brand sales overall rising 9.5%, with Pottery Barn up 14.6%, West Elm up 12.8%, while it did see a decline of 2.2% at Williams-Sonoma, a 3.1% drop at Pottery Barn Kids and Teen, which was actually better than expected. So overall, this stronger than expected report sort of underscores that the higher end consumer is still spending on home goods, and that is sending shares higher by around 15% here in after hours, after gaining around 9% in the regular session. Mel?
All right, Seema, thank you. Seema Modi, we got those good numbers from Toll yesterday, Tim. That's a higher end consumer, higher end home buyer. We said it could be a good read through for Williams-Sonoma and RH, and both of them are higher in the after hours now.
Yeah. Boy, and it was. And last night, I think I said I was concerned. And so I have to tell you that for a company that that comp at 9.5% when year over year or they were building off of a 40% comp is extraordinary. And if you look at the value of the brand portfolio there, too. And again, West Elm seems to be clicking on all cylinders. But again, it was a record quarter for a company that now trades at 7.5 times. So not expensive. In other words, 7.5 times forward is pretty extraordinary here. How much pull forward? I'm not sure we know. We know this is a different segment in terms of where their shopper is relative to some of the folks that are disappointed. I do think that the stay-at-home nesting dynamic and maybe working from home has a longer cycle to it. But I have to tell you, I think this has to run out of gas at some point. And I do think at some point, even those consumers who are higher up on the income chain are going to feel it. And it's just not been this quarter.
I thought it was a really impressive quarter for, I mean, obviously the things we talked about, Williams-Sonoma itself, which is high margin, Pottery Barn, very good numbers. But to me, it's about, here was an opportunity to take numbers down, be cautious, right? We saw what Dick's Sporting Goods did, being overly cautious. They didn't feel the need to do that here, so they must feel pretty confident about how things are going. And so this was an excellent quarter. There's a lot to like here. I don't know if there was some short covering, but I was very impressed. And as you brought up, RH, this is clearly on target for RH. I saw it up, I don't know, $16 in the after hours. Definitely good for them.
For as much talk about inflationary pressures, supply chain issues, et cetera, Guy, not a problem here.
They operated extraordinarily well. And Tim did say last night they thought Williams-Sonoma was cheap. So, you know, he didn't mention that. He's being humble, but he's right. And I thought it traded well today, obviously. But I think this move is justified. You're talking about operating margins up. They're 17.1%, up 120 basis points year over year, in a pretty difficult environment. Good for them. They should be rewarded for this. And if you start doing back of the envelope math, I mean, this stock, again, not that it matters, but, you know, at its trough just a couple days ago, was cut down almost by 58% from the levels we saw in November. I actually think you can see this thing continue to rally on a benign tape. 50% of the recent, you know, move that we've seen from 220 down to 102 gets you to 160, and I think that's a reasonable level to start selling the stock.
All right, speaking of retail, check out Kohl's, trading nearly 12% higher today. The rally coming amid reports that potential buyers are still bidding for the company despite a rough earnings report and market volatility. Offers may come in, though, lower than initially expected. Karen, as the viewers know, you've been fired up. This is a company that it's gotten under your skin. So what's
really,
your take here?
Yes, I'm back, Kohl's. We saw the stock trading at 36.5, 37 earlier today. That's where your plan, your strategic plan, will trade on its own. So it was only with this story of bidders bidding lower than where they were that made the stock trade into the 40s. So remember that, board, when you consider these bids. Even though they're lower, they're a hell of a lot higher, most likely, than where your stock is right now. Two questions for you. For the board, were you aware that these two executives, the chief merchandising officer and chief marketing officer, were leaving? Were you aware of that before the meeting on May 11th? Because that's something the shareholders really should have known. If you were aware of it, that's not so cool, board. And if you weren't aware of it, that's not so cool, management, right? There's not a lot of good things going on here. The second thing that I thought was really interesting was T. Rowe Price, which is a great company, right? They made a very unusual, visible show of support to Kohl's management. And I wonder, did they know and yet still chose to support Kohl's management so visibly? Or did they not know, in which case T. Rowe put some pressure on management, because this is the management that didn't let you know that the two of the three probably most important executives were leaving. So something for you to chew on, T. Rowe. I'm a shareholder. I'm really upset with how this process is going. We're 4 months into it. They don't even necessarily have the bids in hand yet. Or if they do, they're not telling us, which might be okay. Do the process. Sell it, even if it's not as good as what you would have gotten for shareholders had you engaged originally in January, when you got more than one expression of interest.
At what point do you say to yourself, Karen,
yes,
I should sell.
That is an excellent question. Probably at 58 was the right answer. But here I am now at 40 and sort of worked up over it. I'm hoping there is enough pressure to get them. It's just a question of if I looked at it today and owned none. I do think there is a reasonable shot that this board is pressured into doing the right thing.
But this board, as you said, it sounds like it's incompetent.
I don't know if incompetent is the right word. I think it was certainly misleading, right? Misleading.
So it's either deceptive or incompetent.
Okay. In either case, I think a sale is the right thing. Also, if you're on the board of directors, you don't want this kind of thing. You don't want me yelling at you, right? Who wants that? I can tell you my husband doesn't want it.
I don't want it. That's
for sure. You don't want people, you know, they were sued the other day. They got sued for, you know, withholding material, non-public information. They have to feel like, wow, our plan is really not working so well. That cheery, you know, conference call after your guidance was ridiculous. You know it. So they don't want to deal with people like me.
Well, let me ask you this, though, Karen. And I think it's really interesting. So twice in the last week, we've had a little dust up over Kohl's here. I mean, at some point, couldn't this really go south? If people like you who are shareholders are saying they're either dumb or negligent or incompetent.
I didn't say they were dumb.
Well, I mean, but some of the other buyers or potential interest, they may leave, right? And then this
they're
thing goes much
Kohl's
lower.
They're not buying Kohl's because Kohl's is killing it, right? They're in this position. Kohl's is in this position because they're not killing it. Any buyer has to think, I have a better plan than Kohl's plan, right? And if they can buy it a little bit cheaper, great. But plus, a lot of them are looking at it as a real estate transaction, right, which doesn't, it doesn't matter. So that's why
I'm all I'm saying is that the market history is not kind to stories like this. When you have people on TV really upset about situations and then you have, you know, boards that are under fire and then, you know, claims of whatever, not being particularly honest. I mean, my bet would be that this thing, there's not a great buyer for this thing and it ends up going much lower.
It could. There are several buyers, allegedly. I believe that they do generate cash flow despite themselves. They do. So I do think there's value here. It's whether or not this board will try to say, you know what, it's not a great time to sell. We're not going to sell. Never mind. I don't want to, I don't think I'd want to be on the board of directors that does that.
Yeah.
It's a lot of feedback that they don't want.
I think we'll be sending this clip to the board. See what they say. Coming up, is the Fed being naive? That's what one top fixed income investor thinks about the central bank's stance on inflation. His thesis next. And later shares a snowflake plunging after its earnings report. What was in the release that spooked investors? We've got the details ahead. You're watching Fast Money live from the Nasdaq market site in Times Square. Back right after this.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation. Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Let's get another check on the markets. Higher today after the Fed minutes gave no reason to believe the central bank would become more hawkish. But our next guest warns the Fed is showing naivete in its inflation battle. First time we've used that word on Fast, I think, ever. Michael Kontopoulos runs fixed income for Richard Bernstein Advisors. He is the former head of high yield strategy at Bank of America. I think that's when we talked last, Michael. Great to have you back. Welcome back to Fast Money.
Thanks, Michelle. How are you?
So the Fed is really, really, really behind. I mean, that, you think that that's basically what the Fed minutes show?
Yeah, I mean, listen, we all know that they're behind the curve. And, you know, I think what we're seeing, what we saw today, is that they still are just hoping that supply chain bottlenecks are going to relieve themselves. You know, they still think there's some degree of transitory to the inflation story, and they haven't really woken up to the idea that maybe there's a secular shift going on. You know, maybe globalization to deglobalization and over a decade of monetary and now fiscal stimulus has created a new paradigm of higher than average inflation. And I think they don't get it. I think they think they're going to hike 50 basis points a few times and then that's going to be enough. And I just don't see that being the case.
Hey, Michael, it's Tim. Welcome back. When I hear you say, and I saw in your notes that you think credit right now is fine, and I'm going to listen to anybody on credit, it's you. But the things you're talking about in terms of the Fed and their need to be more aggressive and to basically cut growth out at the knees, at what point do you start getting worried about credit when growth is cut? In other words, what kind of growth headwinds will lead to some erosion here? And I know you can't pinpoint it to the data point or the date, but that has me concerned. And I have seen widening in high yield, although you don't sound concerned.
you know, I'm not too concerned, Tim. I mean, let's look at the fundamentals. Leverage has collapsed. Interest coverage is at all-time high. So what's interest coverage? Interest coverage is the ability to pay the coupon on your debt through earnings. That's never been higher. What did corporate America do during the recession? Well, they termed out their debt and they locked in really low interest rates, just like homebuyers did. And now their interest costs are so low, it's very easy to service those. You look at the amount of upgrades versus downgrades in high yield. They're outpacing, upgrades are outpacing downgrades. The default rate's virtually zero. And most of our models for default rates looking out over the next 6 months suggest they're going to continue to be zero. Cash on corporate balance sheets are near all-time highs. And now you're starting to see corporates in the last quarter spend that cash on CapEx. You know, I think there's a lot of negativity, obviously, in the equity markets. Growth is clearly slowing, but it's not slow. And the Fed hiking, you know, a few times isn't going to slow consumption when you look at consumer and corporate balance sheets as healthy as they are. So I just think that, you know, certainly 2022 is not going to be a year for recession. Spreads have widened because of the increase in volatility. As a fixed income investor, you want certainty of coupon and ultimate payment of principal. And any increase in volatility would basically suggest that that certainty is diminished. And that's what the widening has been about, not about fundamentals.
It's Karen. Thanks for being on. Let me ask you, these minutes that they seem, I don't know, May 4th or so, it seems like actually a lot's happened in the 2.5 weeks since then, where not just Powell, but a number of Fed governors have been very, very hawkish. Do you think things are different there now than they were when these minutes were happening?
You know, I don't think that much has honestly changed. You know, they're trying to tighten financial conditions through rhetoric, through forward guidance. You know, Powell, I'm sure, loves the idea that the 2 years is up a ton this year and that they might not have to hike as much as, you know, they would otherwise have to if the markets weren't lower, if 2 year yields weren't higher. But, you know, I don't think we're seeing consumption get reined in at all. So I think not that much has really changed over the last 2 weeks. I think they're just trying to jawbone the markets a little bit and let them do their job for them. And, you know, we'll see if that works. My suspicion is it won't. And they'll ultimately are going to have to actually hike higher than expected or, you know, increase the pace of QT, which I think is, of course, a secondary tool that they'll use.
So those two options, Michael, the equity markets, I don't want to say we're likely, but we could see some more downside. Right now, you say that the Fed doesn't care if we see 30 to 40% downside on the NASDAQ, for instance. We're already down 26% this year. So that's another 14% or whatever on top of the decline that we've seen already. That's what you're
finally
seeing.
Yeah, I mean, Michelle, listen, I always get asked, isn't the Fed put still in play? Look at Q4 2018 where they backtracked. My answer has been the Fed doesn't really care about equity markets today. Particularly when you consider that the majority of the downturn has been in what we think are bubble assets, long duration assets, spec tech and, you know, high valuation tech in general. And do you think the Fed really cares if those things go down that much? Not when they're fighting inflation. You know, the difference between today and 2018 is they weren't really fighting anything. They had no battle. They just wanted to bring up the Fed funds rate as high as they could without really tipping anything out of balance. And when the market said mercy, they went and they stopped. This go around, they actually have something to fight. Now, I think they're naive in thinking they're able to fight it with a few 50 basis point hikes and then be done. But they're fighting inflation. And ultimately, that means they're going to have to go higher. And, you know, equities going down is not going to deter them from that. Credit might, but not equities.
Michael, thank you. It's Melissa, by the way. But I'm so glad to see you. It's been so long. I'm going to let that go. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks, Melissa. Take care.
Mike Katopoulos. All right, Guy Adami, what do you think? I think that you like what he's saying.
I do. I do like what he's saying because the Fed should never really be looking at the market, in my opinion. It's something I've been saying for a while, and they clearly did. Specifically in 2018, I think they blinked for two reasons. They were getting browbeat by the administration at the time, and the market went down, Dan will tell you, 19.9% in 2.5 months. Of course, inflation wasn't a problem then, so they did what they needed to do in their opinion. Now inflation is a problem. By the way, the inflation they were wishing for years, and I think to his point, it's going to take a long time. This is not something that is... you can't defeat this overnight, and I don't think people fully understand how sticky this inflation problem is going to be. And if you want proof positive, just look at what's happened to the energy market over the last couple of weeks. Every opportunity to sell off, and it hasn't. And wait till China reopens. Watch how high crude goes.
All right, coming up, we have got more earnings coming your way. Shares of Snowflake dropping after its report. We'll bring you the details next. Plus, we're talking big tech, several shareholder meetings making headlines today, plus more on where Elon Musk stands in his deal for Twitter. That is all up when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got another earnings alert. Snowflake shares dropping 14% after delivering worse than expected guidance for the quarter. Frank Hollins got the latest from the call. Frank.
Look, listening to the call, nothing really remarkable on there. Just looking at the report as well, another possible reason for Snowflake's sharp drop appears to be the deceleration of product revenue for the data warehouse and analytics company. So take a look at this bar chart here. In 2020, that number for revenue growth for product that came in at 164%. This year, falling to 66%. Products where Snowflake gets 90%. Of its overall revenue. Investors potentially seeing this deceleration as a projection as another red flag after filings show that Salesforce sold all of its remaining shares in Q1 after selling the majority of shares in Snowflake last year. The rest of the report showing growth, remaining performance obligations or RPO, now $2.6 billion, up 82% year over year. Net revenue retention up 174%. That's growth in revenue from existing customers. Guidance for the full year, mostly in line with estimates. The call started again a few minutes ago. We're going to keep listening. And CEO Frank Slootman, he's going to appear on Tech Check tomorrow. Melissa, back over to you.
Frank Holland, thank you. Dan, what do you make of this?
I think there's a lot of things to like. That net revenue retention number is huge, and that's what a lot of investors who are invested in names like this willing to pay multiples they were willing to pay since the company went public. That's what they're really focused on here. I think revenue deceleration with a $40 billion market cap was much higher. We know the stock's down, 60% from last year's highs. It's still trading about 20 times sales this year, 15 times next, and that just stacked up to a lot of its peers just seems a bit expensive again in this market. We just did that, right? We just said this about NVIDIA, and I think that's what's going on, because I don't think that guidance was particularly horrible, but investors, again, are not really willing to sit around and ask too many questions.
Yeah, Tim?
I've actually got them at close to 40 times. I mean, if they're a $41 billion company and they're going to do $1.2 billion in sales, it's just not cheap. Your point is well taken. I'm echoing it. And also their adjusted, their adjusted op margin was so far off the mark that has to be some aberration. But again, it's a company that's not profitable now at a time when I just think everybody realizes we're not. It's one thing to pay, X multiple of sales for a software company. It's another thing to pay for a company that's losing money. And I think that's really where the I believe this can go down even more.
Coming up, big tech in focus with some high-profile companies holding shareholder meetings today. We'll tell you what came out of those next. And Chevron hitting an all-time high as energy continues to climb. But the big run is some options traders betting on a potential cool down. The details ahead. Don't go anywhere. Back in two. Welcome back to Fast Money. Twitter shares jumping in the after hours. A new filing suggesting that Elon Musk is committed to doing a deal and is seeking additional funding. Let's bring in Fast Money friend Gene Munster of Loop Ventures. Gene, what's your take on these developments?
Melissa, I think it is evidence that Elon wants to pursue this transaction. It does not tell us what the price is. I would be shocked, Melissa, if he pays $54 for this. I still think the number is $42, but it is a step in the right direction. Just quickly, how do you get to $42 is that if you look at what the market has done, the NASDAQ, since he announced this on April 1st, down 19%. Of course, the number 42 means something to Elon. I think all roads lead to $42. And I would put myself safely on the ledger that says that I do believe he is going to acquire Twitter. And just one further piece that I think this plays into, if you even think about Elon, his behavior over the last few weeks since this has been announced has become increasingly political. And I think that that is another rev to the benefit of him owning Twitter. It's a powerful political voice that he can have with Twitter. And so ultimately, I think that this is a step in the right direction at $42.
Twitter had a shareholder meeting as well, Gene. Did they say anything about this whole thing? And I would imagine that Twitter, if he wanted to renegotiate lower, Twitter doesn't have that much of a choice at this point. I think Twitter looks like a worse company today than it did before if Elon Musk walks.
Absolutely. He's done a good job of really spoiling how investors think about Twitter, how they think about Twitter's management team. I think it's evidence of what popularity can get you. Elon has 93 million followers on Twitter. Parag, the CEO, has about 700,000 followers. That mass, I think, is sprinkled in many investors. And I would agree, investors' belief in this. Also, the core business has deteriorated, not just because of what potentially could be going on with some of the advertising components. We didn't get any negative updates on that front today, but also the distraction. We've talked about that before. So you have to imagine that Elon has done a successful role here in terms of negotiating a lower price. And I think that if this doesn't happen, the stock is $25. That's I think, a conservative view of where this would go.
Hey, Gene, it's Karen. If you really feel strongly 42 is the price it ends up, the stock's 39.54 now. It would seem like a really good short at that level because it's hard to have a huge degree of certainty that Elon will close. And if he doesn't close and he sells his shares, I think that 25 might be the upside for Twitter in the short term.
It could be. The analysis, the weighted return that I've looked at is the probability that happens, 70% chance. The downside to 25 is a 30% chance. I think that nets out at call it -2, -3%. I agree with you, Karen. I do not think that this is worthy of investing and trading. I think you just kind of stand clear and enjoy the fireworks of how this is going to play out.
Gene, good to see you, as always.
Thank you.
Gene Munster, Loop Ventures. Karen, were you thinking about getting back in? I mean,
well, I get why Elon 420 would be, you know, great for him. That's a giant haircut. It would really show the board just feels like the merger agreement wasn't adequate to force him to close. That's their option, to force him to close, to go to court and force him to close. I don't know.
Well, it's also a tough thing here because, you know, Gene just mentioned that he's taken this political turn and he wants this asset, which I think is really interesting. If you think about his other asset, the one that's $682 billion, that's called Tesla, and that's down 50% from its recent highs. Most of the customers here in America don't really subscribe to his new alt-right turn that he really wants to flex on, and that's where he's going. So those are the people buying electric vehicles. The party that he's aligning himself don't seem to really care too much about some of the climate concerns that he found. Or he didn't find Tesla, but when he joined the company. So it seems to be risk there as far as Tesla's business. So you have Twitter's business that is quickly eroding with no leadership in this thing, and the longer it goes. And then Tesla, who knows what's happening here, because that thing seems like it's one quarter away from a big guide lower.
Coming up, energy continuing its climb today, and options traders are homing in on one name. The details next. Fast Money's back right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Energy adding to its big run this year. The XLE now up 55% as a ton of big oil companies hold annual shareholder meetings. Some options activity in one name is catching our eye. Tony Zhang joins us with the action. Tony.
Yeah, Melissa, as crude and energy shares trade near relative highs, we do see one trader betting on more muted outlooks here for one particular stock, Chevron. Taking advantage of the elevated implied volatilities that we currently see here in Chevron, selling 2,500 contracts of the June 175 straddle, collecting in this particular case $11.94 credit for this particular straddle. That's about $3 million in premium, and betting that this stock is not going to potentially move substantially higher or substantially lower, with profit around between 163 and 187. That's a pretty wide range, about a 7% range around the current price of the stock over the next 23, 24 days, betting that we're not going to see some big moves here from energy over the next couple of next few weeks.
Guy, what do you think? Do you agree with the action?
Look, Chevron traded up to 175 and change today, new all-time high for Chevron. Think about that for a second. So I can understand why people are saying, you know, maybe it's time, maybe we'll start to cycle out of energy into some other things. I totally get it. Do I agree with it? Not necessarily, because I'm one that thinks energy is going to continue to go higher from here. I think Tim probably shares those thoughts as well. We've thought that for a while, and you'll learn more about it in my final trade. That's called a tease, Melissa, coming up in a few minutes.
Hmm. Tim, are those your thoughts as well? Do you share them?
For sure. Guy's teasing my tease for my final trade, too. But Chevron, I think we're energy squared now. So I think you've got a case where if you look at the debt and balance sheet profile of these companies, Chevron is essentially 0.25 debt to equity. You have a lot of the big names in the sector that at some point are going to be essentially zero debt. It's almost unfathomable to think about where this sector has gone. And these companies have not changed their commitment to giving capital back to shareholders. That's the story. Again, I said 2.7 to 4.7% in the S&P just this year from year end. It's going a lot higher.
Tony, thank you. Tony Zhang from Raw Options Action. Be sure to tune into the full show Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Up next, final trades. Time for the final trade. Let's go around the horn. Guy Dami.
As teased, Marathon Petroleum, MPC.
Tim Seymour.
Schlumberger, look at that chart at 45. It's a beautiful breakout. Rig counts are doubling. Schlumberger.
Karen Feinerman.
Yes. This is one we haven't talked about in a while. Lululemon. On Analyst Day, April 20th, they reported great numbers and $385 a share at the time. Now it's $260. I bought some here.
Dan Nathan.
Yeah, CME's gotten hit really hard over the last couple weeks here. I think it's a buy if it's like a double bottom on the chart today.
All right. Thank you all for watching Fast Money. We'll see you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Fast. Meantime, stay tuned. A 2-hour special of the news with Shepard Smith live from Texas starts right now.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.